welcome to episode 49 of the DFA Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Grossnick, and joining me, as always, my co-host, RJ Anderson. RJ, what's up?
Nothing in the free agent market for sure.
Oh, come now. We have a little bit to talk about. We have like one or two major league free agent signings that we can talk through, even an injury, which it's kind of sad that we can get excited for an injury report on our DFA podcast. So we got some stuff to talk about. We're not going to completely bore our listeners today.
Nothing makes you sound more like a Mets fan than getting excited over an injury report.
Oh, spoiler alert. We're going to talk about the Mets. Also joining us is our producer and co-host, Sean Brody. Sean, we have some Mets talk, so you get to be involved early and often in this podcast.
Always fun days when there's Mets talk, and yeah.
So we'll lead off with our big move, which is the Mets signing free agent third baseman / first baseman / New Jerseyite Todd Frazier to a 2-year, $17 million contract. The initial response that everybody seems to have is, boy, that's a cheap contract for Todd Frazier. But we'll just kind of open it up with the thoughts on Frazier as a player. So RJ, I'll let you open it up as to what you think about Todd Frazier as a player, and then we'll talk a little bit about the context for the deal after that.
Well, based purely on production or expected production over the next 2 or 3 years, I thought the Frazier was the top third baseman available in the free agent market. Now, you know, once you get past that point, his age and some of the other issues with his game will probably cause him to deteriorate quicker than Mike Moustakas, but yeah, in the short term, I think he's a better bet to be productive and more productive than Moustakas was. You know, his game is based around power. I think everyone knows that. He's a guy who's going to give you 25-plus home runs every year, or that's the hope. He's going to give you that much home runs every single season. He's at worst a tolerable defender at third base. He has experience elsewhere, including at first base, which might come in handy. Last season, he set a new career high in walk rate, over 14%, which is very impressive, and it held when he moved from the White Sox to the Yankees, so it's not like he was just benefiting from that White Sox lineup. His strikeouts, they're not as significant as a lot of people make them out to be. I've been seeing a lot of tweets and comments about how Frazier gives you a lot of strikeouts, but he really doesn't. I mean, he's been under 25% throughout his entire career. He was below 22% last season. That's not that much when you're talking about the kind of power he can produce. And, you know, I've been saying about his power, he has a career ISO over 200. He's been over 200 every season since 2013, about 173 mark. So, you know, he's a power hitter, plain and simple. I think the biggest negative about his game is that he hits a lot of infield flies. The last two seasons, he's been near 20 to 25% infield flies of total fly balls, according to Baseball Reference. So there are a lot of easy outs. And when you combine that with the strikeout rate, it's probably going to feel worse than it actually is. But he's a good hitter. He's going to be probably an above average hitter for the next two seasons. And he's going to give the Mets a lot of punch, which is not something that they necessarily had previously. So I think that covers the bases. What do you guys think about Frazier and this deal?
So let me just jump in with one minor thing. So recently, Baseball Prospectus has rolled out its Picota projections. We have an idea of what the grand machine that Baseball Prospectus uses to project future performance. And it has what I would consider a rather negative outlook on Frazier going forward. He's been a 2 to 4 win player over the last 4 years, but next year they're projecting him to only be worth about a win and a half, kind of maintaining a just slightly above average offensive production despite all that power that you talked about. And also there's a little bit of a playing time issue with the Picota projection. They only project him for like 500 plate appearances, which is probably a little off. He should probably play a full season in New York. So I just wanted to throw that out there before we talk, and Sean, I'll let you take this on. The Mets bringing on Todd Frazier and the size of the contract, what are your kind of thoughts about that, and why is this surprising or not surprising to you?
So, I mean, my initial reaction to it was kind of curious because I like Wilmer Flores. I thought that giving him more playing time or more of an everyday role would have been something the Mets could have survived with if they went and got kind of a bigger name pitcher. But, I mean, Frazier's good. Like you said, the stuff about his strikeout rate is kind of weird to me because the league average was like 0.1% away from what his actual strikeout rate was last year. So it's not like he's just this absolutely strikeout hoss, and it's weird. But offensively, I don't think he differs much from Wilmer. I don't think he differs much from Asdrubal Cabrera. I think you're pretty much getting the same. You might say that Flores and Cabrera have performed a little better or closer to league average, but I mean, the difference you're getting is in his defense. Frazier's going to be himself. He was last year, I believe he was like a 10-run defender at third base. And
it depends a little bit on what sort of metric you want to use. So, for example, like Baseball Prospectus's metrics, they would say that he was about a 3 or 4 win defender at third base. I think the eye test and what kind of the general consensus is beyond the raw defensive stats, which tend to vary up and down, is that Frazier is an average or maybe slightly above average defensive third baseman. I think the numbers kind of play that out over his career.
And when you compare that to what the Mets had been running out at third base with Asdrubal and Wilmer being absolutely just bad at third, that's probably like a 2-win difference in general, just going from their defense to Frazier's defense, even if you consider Frazier league average. So I like it. I think Matt Yospin had made a good point to me on Twitter that you're pretty much replacing Matt Reynolds with Wilmer Flores as the 25th man on the bench. I think that's fair. It sucks because you wanted them to go out and get something a little more or spend a little more for one person instead of just these kind of middle tier deals where they just kind of put them all together and go at it with quantity instead of quality. And I mean, we're just not going to get that at this point. They're still projected, I think, $144 million on their payroll, which is down like $10 million from last year if they had the same payroll they have right now into opening day. So, I mean, it is what it is. This is probably the new norm with the Mets, isn't it, Brian?
Maybe. I think that you might be underselling what a good deal this is for the Mets because it's such a strange fit. In some ways, it is a strange fit because he is very similar in terms of his playing style to Wilmer Flores. But Wilmer Flores is probably going to get at least half the time at first base, I would say, because right now it looks like there's going to be a platoon situation with him and Adrian Gonzalez at first base. And Adrian Gonzalez is not healthy and will never be healthy. So assuming that Gonzalez is going to take the lion's share of playing time at first base is probably a mistake. So I do think Flores is already going to get relatively regular playing time, and he deserves relatively regular playing time. But Frazier is kind of, when the Mets acquired him, that allowed them to move Asdrubal Cabrera from third base to second base. Instead of acquiring a second baseman, they say, well, we'll acquire a third baseman, we'll shift Cabrera. And I honestly think Frazier is a really good fit for this team now that I've thought it through. Like you said, Matt Reynolds gets pushed off the roster. The problem, I would say, with the Mets roster is the re-signing of Jose Reyes. That's the kind of the bench guy who's going to be the backup shortstop, backup second baseman, backup third baseman. And I'm not sure he's good enough to have warranted the contract that he earned, and he's duplicative of a number of players that the Mets already have. Wilmer Flores could be the backup shortstop. Cabrera could be the backup shortstop. And the team already has guys like TJ Rivera. They did have Matt Reynolds. Gavin Cecchini someday will get a major league shot, maybe, at this point. So they already had a couple of these kinds of bench guys. And I think Reyes is the one that doesn't fit more than Frazier. Now that Frazier's on board, I think he's a definite upgrade and he's going to allow for some better offensive production, some better defense. Plus Frazier can also move over to first base. If, for example, Flores gets injured, he can be the caddy for Gonzalez or eventually Jay Bruce at first base. So I think this fits in really well. I think the biggest deal about this is the $17 million price tag on this guy. I don't think it would be too outside the realm of possibility before this offseason of, quote, collusion and the, these low contracts, guys not signing, to expect Frazier to get a contract that's about twice this. over maybe three seasons. It wouldn't have surprised me at all if he would have gotten the deal that Daniel Murphy got coming off his 2015 with the Mets, where he got 3 years and about $12 million a year. This is really small, and I understand there might have been a small hometown discount for him to play so close to his home in New Jersey, and that's really cool, but this is really inexpensive. I feel like I had him as like the 15th best free agent, signing for 2 years, which is really, really nice for a team because, like RJ said, he may be likely to decrease in performance a little faster than some other guys, especially if his defense starts to go. It's going to be a very valuable trade asset if the Mets fall out of contention quickly. I just think this is a really savvy deal. It just doesn't make a lot of sense in composition with some of the other deals they made this offseason. So, RJ, I'd like to kind of bring it back to you for just some final thoughts on the Frazier deal. What do you think this does for the Mets? Does it do anything to change their outlook for this year or beyond? Does it, kind of change the way you think about the team or the front office or valuation of this kind of player? Or is this just kind of doesn't really move the needle for you?
No, I think it does move the needle. And I'm not sure if I would say that the Mets are necessarily, the top contender for one of those wild card spots, but I kind of like what they've done this offseason. Getting Bruce back, I thought was fine, even though it's a weird fit, as we talked about before. Todd Frazier, I really, really like this deal, even if it's a little curious during this winter that someone would take this kind of deal. And as you mentioned, it wouldn't have been ridiculous to think he would have gotten a much, much bigger deal heading into the offseason. I'm fine taking a flyer on Adrian Gonzalez, even though I'm not sure he's going to repeat last season. Or excuse me, I'm not sure he's going to reverse last season. The Swarzak deal, I'm not sure he's going to repeat last season, but I'm willing to buy that he'll be at least a decent reliever. The only thing I didn't like was the Jose Reyes signing for reasons that are obvious. And, beyond that, I think they need to go out and get a pitcher. I would like to see them add, if not some rotation depth, at least one more reliever, I think. And realistically, I'd like to see them add someone to the middle of the rotation, be it Lance Lynn, Alex Cobb, whomever, because of the canary in the mine, which is obviously, the pitching health, excuse me, the health of their pitchers like Syndergaard, Wheeler, and so on. I think they really could take advantage of this market, add a guy like Lynn, and suddenly this team, while it wouldn't be at the level to compete with the Nationals necessarily for the division crown, would look pretty good in relation to the wild card. Now, granted, nobody knows how their pitchers are going to do this season in terms of health, but that's a risk they're going to have to live with no matter how they built their roster up. So I think take advantage of the market, get one of those mid-rotation starters, and suddenly this looks like a competitive club.
So I just want to throw this out here real quick because I think that with the Mets and their payroll situation, I really wouldn't be surprised if they're priced out of Lance Lynn, even if Lynn's value is really kind of downtrodden because of the market and that kind of thing. It would very much surprise me that the Wilpons would be willing to go out and offer, even if Lynn ends up on like a 3 year, $30 million deal. It wouldn't surprise me if I saw the Wilpons throw up their hands and be like, whoa, 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 can't afford that kind of contract, these days. But here's a name that I really kind of have started to like for the Mets rotation. And if I'm being a crazy person, please, by all means, shut me down. Jason Vargas, former Met Jason Vargas. The Mets probably could use a left-hander. They could probably use somebody who's capable of eating innings. Vargas is a guy who needs to be in a pitcher-friendly stadium and environment. And what I kind of feel like is just like what you said, RJ, if the Mets bring in a starter and someone who's capable of, being a regular, less of an injury risk, more of a, 160, 180 inning starter, they can shift one of these other guys into the bullpen and then they kind of kill two birds with one stone. For example, they could move Zach Wheeler if he's healthy, or they could move Matz if he's healthy, or they can move Matt Harvey, who is horrible, into the bullpen and then be able to maybe supplement that bullpen and the starting rotation without spending more than maybe, I don't know, $5 million a year, which would really kind of be a coup for them. So I'll let you, Sean, with the Mets fan point of view, is Vargas a good idea or should it be like the Cobb Lynn tier or bust?
I mean, obviously, Lance Lynn is probably my favorite guy to go out and get this year. Vargas is a close second. I like Vargas' stuff. He pitched very well last year. But honestly, I think it's good to aim for Lennon Vargas. But the feeling that I get is that if they get a pitcher at all, it's going to be like R.A. Dickey or someone. It's going to be someone who's been there before, who they liked, and they kind of just bring back on a short deal. Because it feels like they're getting close to how much they actually wanted to spend for the year.
Well, even if it's somebody like Dickey, I don't think there's any question that the Mets need this rotation depth. If you look at their AAA rotation, there's no one there. They effectively don't have, you know, a fallback sixth or seventh starter in AAA at all. So somebody like Dickey on a minor league deal or on a $1 million deal or a split deal or something like that could be a good fit. RJ, I'll let you finish this out. What do you think the Mets should do next?
No, I think Vargas is a good idea, but definitely go out there and get more than a swing man type. And, you know, from there, who knows?
I'm just going crazy over the complete lack. I've heard literally nothing about Jason Vargas this offseason. I don't know. Maybe he's missing.
The Orioles have been tied to him, which is predictable.
Yeah, that's extremely predictable. He seems like if the Orioles are like, ooh, let's really go all out instead of signing, you know, Andrew Cashner and Jeremy Hellickson, let's get the upgraded version. Let's bring Jason Vargas in here. That sounds like, you know, the high end of an Orioles offseason, which is a horrible, horrible, mean thing to say about the Orioles. All right, so that will cover our discussion of the Mets. Probably everyone's a little bit sick of talking about the Mets and talking about free agent collusion. So let's go over some of the other smaller moves that have been made. And trust me, we've got some really small moves on the agenda for today. But Sean, if you can walk us through the minor moves, the transactions that have happened over the past few days, that'd be really awesome.
I'm gonna lead off with the one that I know you love, Brian, and that's Jeff Manship is back. So I'm gonna let you run with it.
You know, it's really funny that like we're like, oh yeah, let's get pumped for Jeff Manship. Manship was a pretty bad starting pitcher swingman, injuries, and then had kind of a renaissance in Cleveland. The end of 2015, all of 2016, it went so well for him in that relief role that he immediately left the country and pitched in the KBO last year, again as a starter. So now the Reds are bringing him in, and we've talked a little bit recently about the Reds having an interesting young rotation. I really like Jeff Manship for this team. I don't necessarily know if I'd want to be using him as a starter if I were the Reds. I think he'd be a nice little complement for their bullpen. But kind of as a swingman or a two-inning guy out of the bullpen, as far as minor league deals go, this is probably one of my favorites. I really would count on him having an actual impact for this team. You know, a small impact, a win maybe. But this is a more impactful minor league signing than most, I feel like.
And I would note that he's probably with the right team if they are going to use him in a multi-inning capacity, because they did it pretty well last season with multiple relievers. So, you know, Brian Price doesn't get much credit for how he's adjusted to the new concept of how to run a pitching staff, but he was pretty good at it last year, and we'll see if he does the same thing with Manship or whomever this season.
And, you know, again, you know, Baseball Prospectus's projections, they have him as about a replacement level pitcher, but slightly better than that, with like a 4.5 ERA guy's reliever. So, you know, getting that kind of player who can come in and be your sixth inning guy for effectively free, not a bad little deal for the Reds. I like it.
So our next one, we have Soonhwan Oh signing with the Texas Rangers, $2.75 million for 1 year. He didn't pitch great last year, never ended up getting traded from the Cardinals, I believe, after tons of rumors that he was going to. But, I mean, this decent upside on it, isn't there?
Well, you know, he's what in his mid-30s already. I think he might be 35, 36. I will say that I think if the ball was juiced last season, it probably hurt him more than your typical pitcher, because he's a guy who pitches up in the zone a lot with his fastball, and it's not necessarily an overpowering fastball. So, you know, that combination, who knows what the ball is going to be like this season. Perhaps it'll go back to quote-unquote normal. Perhaps it will not go back to normal. I don't know, but you know, it's worth taking a look at, and it wouldn't surprise me if he's a productive member of their bullpen.
It's interesting because this is definitely a feast or famine bullpen with the Rangers, kind of depending on who ends up staying in the bullpen and who ends up moving into the rotation, because two of the team's best relievers are Mike Minor and Matt Bush, who it sounds like the team is trying to use in the rotation. If those guys are not available in that bullpen, O is probably going to be a very important part of the bullpen behind Alex Claudio and maybe Jake Diekman or Kella. So I think this is a good deal. I think this is a smart deal. I think it's a weird deal because the Rangers bullpen now has like three guys who are recently came over from NPB in Sungwon Oh, who was Korean but pitched in NPB, Chris Martin and Tony Barnett. So that's kind of a weird thing, right? I mean, it's just kind of an interesting collection of guys.
Yeah, and they just went out and hired Randy Smith and someone else to give them more of a Pacific Rim presence. So the Rangers are definitely one of those teams trying to take advantage of the overseas market, and it seems like they're a believer in these pitchers going over there, and making adjustments and coming back and having success. And you can trace it back to Colby Lewis as well. So they've definitely shown a willingness to take chances on these guys looking for a second life in American baseball.
So, yeah, I think this is not a bad deal. It's I wouldn't expect him to be anything close to what he was in 2016. He was very, very good in 2016. I think we're going to see something a lot closer to his stats they had in 2017, where he was a little bit better than replacement level. But so I would say that the final boss has kind of been downgraded to kind of like a mid boss at this point before you get to the end.
So our next one we have is Ervin Santana. He had surgery on his right middle finger. He will be out 10 to 12 weeks, but that's only about 3 months. So probably what, May? The Twins already need a pitcher. What are they going to do now? Are they going to go out and sign a big guy, or are they just going to keep kind of waiting around?
They needed another pitcher before, this even was released. And I don't know. I think they need to go out there and at least try to sign, Cobb or Lynn or even Darvish. I know they just submitted a formal offer on him, but I also wouldn't be surprised if they turn to the trade market and try to acquire Oda Rizzi or Colin McHugh and maybe boost the rotation that way, because they've been very active with their bullpen. Otherwise, the roster has basically been untouched. And if they're going to make just one more move, I forgot Michael Pinata, but obviously he won't play into this season in all likelihood. If they're going to make just one more move, they need to get at least a mid-rotation starter in there to really boost their chances of being competitive again this season.
Yeah, I kind of think this might be like the dagger in the heart of the Twins being a wild card favorite, because I think Santana is very underrated in how he is the kind of the fulcrum around which the rest of the rotation balances. Even if the team goes out and gets a Yu Darvish, which I really, really think more than any other team that's out there, including the Dodgers, including the Brewers, including anybody else, the Twins are the team that needs Yu Darvish more than any other team in baseball. And even if they go out and get him now, they can only rely on Darvish once every 5 days. And when your 2 and 3s are going to be Jose Berrios and Kyle Gibson, I think that you can't really consider that team a legitimate threat to go into the playoffs the same way. I love their offense. I think their lineup is really good and really interesting. But I almost think that with Santana out of the picture until maybe May, maybe June, maybe not being 100% when he comes back, I would seriously consider at least going out and getting a second lower tier reliable starter that maybe has a little bit of upside in addition to playing in the deep end of the free agent pool. Because even with Santana in place, this is a team that could have used two starting pitchers. And now I feel like they really need a number one and they probably need a number four.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Well, I mean, I think that while Darvish makes the most sense, and certainly I hope that they get Darvish because they need him, it really feels like they might try to just snag one of an Arrieta or a Lynn and then make a second trade on the market. Who do you think that the Twins should target for trade? Because, I mean, I look at a lot of the Astros guys that they have and how they have too many pitchers and a lot of starters, and I think that's a decent fit, is it?
I would say up front that I do not think Yu Darvish will sign with the Twins. So I think that they need to go out there and try to get somebody who maybe has a little bit more strikeout stuff, because to me it looks like they're going to end up with like an Alex Cobb type. Maybe Cobb, maybe Lynn as their, quote, number one. And so when I'm going out to look to make a trade after that, I probably would look towards Colin McHugh. He seems like the type of guy who would be a really slick fit there. I don't think they want to spend enough to bring in a Chris Archer because it would bring the team down too much. I would think that the Rays would be pretty open to dealing Odorizzi, who is relatively expensive for the Rays. But I would like to see the Twins try to go after somebody with a little bit more strikeout stuff.
Yeah, you mentioned McHugh. I think McHugh makes good sense. Hopefully they go out and try to get something on the trade market. And so our next move, we have the Blue Jays signing John Axford and Jake Paterka to a minor league deal.
Yeah, the interesting thing here, I think, is Axford, because you look at his numbers and he was just an absolute wasteland last season. I mean, this is a guy who struggled with his command and struggled with tipping pitches his entire career. Last season, he walked more than 7/9. You think, oh, you know, he just couldn't find the zone at all. But the funny thing is, if you look at his strike percentage, it was actually higher than it had been in either 2014, 2015, or 2016, according to Baseball Reference. So it seems like an issue where, you know, he just lost his command for a cluster of pitches. But overall, he was throwing more strikes than usual, which is, again, very funny to think about when the guy walked 7/9 last season. The other interesting thing about him, I think, is that he altered his pitch selection last season. And, you know, he's usually been a guy who threw a lot of four-seamers. Well, last year he actually threw more sinkers than four-seamers, and it was the first time in his career he had thrown less than 50% four-seamers, and he threw 30%. So I wonder if this is a situation where the Blue Jays are going to alter him by telling him, go back out there, throw your four-seamer up in the zone over and over again, and, you know, pitch like he used to pitch, and, you know, maybe see if they can get – production out of him that way. With Paterka, he's really never found a lot of success in the majors by your typical measures. He does, however, have favorable platoon splits against right-handed batters, so perhaps they see him as a rookie, so to speak.
For what it's worth, I have no interest in talking about Paterka. I will defer to you on all of that, RJ, because you sound intelligent. I'm sure I wouldn't if I tried to talk about him. As far as Axford goes, he was kind of injured last year, and I wonder if that might have had something to do with both his pitch choices and his command issues. So I kind of like him as a bounce-back guy for the Blue Jays. I think that he's the type of guy who could rebound very quickly, especially after pitching so well in 2016, so I like the move for them.
All right, so Philly signing Ryan Flaherty to a minor league deal.
This doesn't make a lot of sense to me. I guess they just need a warm body to replace Ty Kelly, but Ryan Flaherty is not good. The Phillies probably need to be ready to run guys like J.P. Crawford and Kingery out very quickly this year. I get that he does everything. He is a McEwing score all-star. He plays all over the diamond. He's good. He's good at playing all over the diamond, I should say. He is like Michael Martinez in that he will play anywhere and not hit at any of those places. But, I mean, I just kind of think that as far as any move could be considered a bad move for a team on a minor league contract, the Phillies and infielders, that just doesn't seem to be a big need for them. So, good for them, I guess.
Yeah, I don't really have much to add to that other than it's always impressive with a guy when a guy like Flaherty actually reaches free agency, because usually these guys are available with less than 6 years of service time because they've been non-tendered or released or whatever. He actually has 6 years of service time to reach this point. So that's impressive considering he has a career 74 OPS plus and 1.6 wins above replacement. So, you know, he must be doing something right to hang around at the end of benches for six seasons.
Well, I mean, one of those things they did right was play in Baltimore, where apparently he has been replaced on the Orioles roster by Engel Vielma, who we all know as a well-traveled infielder. He's already moved between, I think, four different teams this offseason. So that is not exactly the highest praise when Vielma is the guy who takes over for you.
I disagree, because I would love to be replaced by a individual with a name like that.
Yeah, that would be fantastic. We'll make sure that Engelb is your replacement on the podcast, RJ, and we'll all laugh at my inability to say his name every week on the DFA show.
For the record, Baseball Reference has it as Engel Velma. So you got the second name correct. You did not get the first name correct, though. You're trying to go phonetically, and this is not a situation where that works, apparently.
Good to know.
That's your fun fact of the week, yeah.
It's so much fun. Thank you.
See, they have Baseball Reference has Ryan Flaherty's nickname as the Flash on their page, but I think it's pretty safe to change it now to Ty Kelly's new warm body. Pretty good replacement.
The other thing that we'll throw out here is that he will probably be battling between Pedro Florimon and podcast concern Adam Rosales for the 25th spot on this Philly roster.
Podcast concern? What is this? What is this? Blasphemy.
I am concerned about your love for Adam Rosales. Let's just put it that way.
I thought we were going to get to him with the Cavaliers trade stuff later. But Angels signed Ian Kroll to a minor league deal. Reliever, Angels, any other words we can put to it?
Yeah, I mean, they've been good at finding or unearthing these type of guys before. And, you know, it wasn't too long ago that everyone's giving the Braves some credit for finding him and, you know, kind of etching him in as a potential setup guy for them. And then last season he went and ruined all those hopes by being horrible, giving up a home run and a half for every nine innings. You know, outside of those 51 innings in 2016, he really hasn't had a lot of success in the majors. But, again, the Angels have done a nice job with these bargain bin types, and he's still pretty young. I mean, this will be his age 27 season, even though it feels like he's been around forever. We'll see. I wouldn't be surprised if he finds a home in that bullpen. And who knows, maybe in a year we're overhyping him once more, but I don't know. I'm not going to give up on him just yet, I guess.
Yeah, he's another one of those guys like Exford where you can see a path to him having some success. If he can keep the ball down and raise his ground ball rate, maybe that'll make a difference for him. But yeah, I would not be super concerned about Ian Kroll.
Okay, let's roll off a couple here. We have the Royals signing Blaine Bowyer to a minor league deal. We have the Rangers signing Darwin Barney to a minor league deal. And the Padres signing Tom Wilhelmsen to a minor league deal. So, do any of those matter?
Yeah, I like Bowyer because you know, if you read the New Baseball Prospectus Annual, there's your little plug, the synergy for you. He made the switch last season on the advice of Brian Bannister to throw more four-seamers and fewer sinkers, and his strikeout rate flowered to 7.2 per nine, which, you know, that's not a huge deal, but this is a guy who in recent seasons has done a good job of keeping runs off the board, but because of lousy strikeout rates, and when I say lousy, I mean 4.6 and 3.5 in consecutive seasons, he really hasn't gotten any credit. So I think this is a situation where, you know, it's worth taking a flyer on him, see if he can keep posting ERA pluses over 100 as the last guy out of your bullpen or the second last guy out of your bullpen, and go from there. So I'm perfectly fine with the Royal signing Bowyer, and it wouldn't surprise me if come July, you know, some team trades for him to fill one of the last spots in their bullpen just because he's done a good job at the thing you need to do a good job at if you want to stay in the majors.
Yeah, I think that your comments on Bowyer make a lot of sense. I kind of agree with you there. Darwin Barney is like I don't want to use this analogy, but he's kind of like a cockroach. Like, you never seem to be able to get rid of him, from the Cubs to the Dodgers to the Blue Jays and now to the Rangers. He always seems to pop up because he can play good defense up the middle. And, that's it. That's all I got. But, you know, this is a team where Jerickson Profar is probably going to be the backup middle infielder. They've already got some other guys in the mix in the minor leagues. I don't really see him making much of a difference. And Tom Wilhelmsen, I would love for him to do well this year. And, you know, if there's any place where a pitcher can come out of nowhere and spend a lot of time in a major league bullpen, it's probably San Diego. I mean, right now they're penciling in guys like Buddy Bauman and Jordan Lyles, and I don't even know who else would be like the eighth spot in this bullpen right now, but I do think Wilhelmsen's cooked, and I wouldn't really expect him to do much this year.
All right, so we have a couple more minor league deals left. We have the Rays signing Evan Scribner and the Pirates signing Daniel Nava. So obligatory Daniel Nava sadness, right?
I was surprised he only got a minor league deal because he was actually pretty effective in about 200 plate appearances last year. With regards to Scribner, I don't even honestly know how you say his name. He's kind of interesting because he throws a lot of strikes. He has that rising fastball that the Rays love. He also throws a curveball, so he's playing with eye levels. And, you know, there's a short arm action there. I certainly don't think he's going to be too productive. But two things. One, his most similar pitcher, according to Baseball Reference, by age, or excuse me, both by his current age and through the age 31 season, is Joel Peralta. And y'all know I love Joel Peralta, so hopefully Scribner has some of those, let's call them personality quirks, where he'll drop his arm action or, you know, quick pitch or whatever, because if so, that'd be pretty fun. And number two, have y'all seen that Rays bullpen? There's absolutely no doubt in my mind that this guy is going to get at least 10 to 15 innings, because that bullpen is – it looks very bad on paper. Let's put it that way. And
you think he could muscle past Chaz Rowe in that bullpen, or maybe, you know, shift Austin Pruitt back to the minors?
I am not going to say anything bad about Chaz Rowe, because here's – so Tom Ransel, who's one of my best friends in this industry, has been a Chaz Rowe fan for years. And it's gotten to the point where I went to an Orioles-Rays game last year, and we were sitting, you know, way up there, but behind home plate all the same. And I looked out in the bullpen and I said, I think that's Chaz Rowe warming up. And it was Chaz Rowe. And at that point, I think my girlfriend considered leaving me, because if I know what Chaz Rowe's delivery looks like based on a glance like 400 feet away, then I am probably beyond redemption in her eyes. So
that's a very sad story. But I just want to talk about Nava real quickly. If the Pittsburgh Pirates face a right-handed pitcher on opening day, I bet Daniel Nava is an opening day starter for this Pittsburgh Pirates team. I honestly think that, RJ, you kind of said it, he hit really well last year in limited action with the Phillies. And the Pirates, their outfield, it's weird to say this, has a giant question mark in it right now with Marte and Polanco. And I don't know, it's either going to be like Nava or Adam Frazier or Sean Rodriguez. And Nava's probably the best hitter out of that bunch. I mean, unless the team decides to go with Austin Meadows out the jump, which I don't think they will. I think they'll give him a little time to get his feet back under him in AAA. I see Daniel Nava as being one of the first Pirates players to take the field or to hit for this 2018 season, which is kind of wild.
I take issue with one thing you said there, and that was that the Pirates have one giant question mark on their outfield. To me, they have three. You know, the vacant spot, Polanco is coming off a miserable season, and frankly, he hasn't lived up to the hype. And, you know, Starling Marte has his own issues with struggling after returning from the performance-enhancing drug suspension. So, yeah, they have a lot of questions in that outfield, and I don't know how that's going to work out because, you know, in theory, they have the talent to have a pretty good outfield even without Andrew McCutchen, but in practice, that's a lot of volatility, and it wouldn't surprise me if, you know, two-thirds of their outfield is sort of a black hole. And let me pull up the Pirates schedule, because I actually do want to know if they have a chance to start Daniel Nava on opening day. And it looks like they will begin the season with the Detroit Tigers. They're going to be at Detroit. So
Homer.
Yeah, they're not going to do that. Let's see if he can potentially be a starter on Pirates home opening day. And they'll be playing with Twins then. So, you know, you get deep into that Twins rotation, well, maybe it'll be Mahia. And
I mean, I think start. Michael Fulmer, if he's the guy who pitches against the Pirates, oh, I think you yeah. start him.
Yeah, sorry. For some reason, I had Nava's splits flipped in my head, but no, he will be starting the opening day then if he makes the team. Wow. Go Pirates, huh?
But
how about the Penguins?
That's if Fulmer's ready to throw on opening day, which he might not be coming off that ulnar transposition surgery. If not, the opening day starter for the Tigers, I don't know. I guess they'd probably go with Jordan Zimmermann, even as bad as he was last year, but they could end up going with Matt Boyd or Daniel Norris or something, and if that's the case, then peace out. It'll be David Freese out there or something.
Mike Fiers.
Isn't that wild to think that Mike Fiers got picked up by the Tigers for almost nothing after coming off a season where he was, you know, one of the starting pitchers, at least for a little while, for a team that just won the World Series, and kind of got picked up by the Tigers like he was nothing?
I'm going to be honest. I didn't even remember he had signed with the Tigers until I looked at the roster. That seems like so long ago, even though I know it really wasn't.
Yeah.
Remarkable.
All right, Sean, anything else for us?
So we have one more. The Rangers traded Russell Wilson to the Yankees, and I mean, I guess because there were so many of them, they just kind of leak into baseball. The Cavaliers did everything.
Yeah, so now we've got some moves that are not baseball related because that's how desperate we are. The Russell Wilson thing is still so strange to me. I guess people just love to bring him into camp, and he wanted to go to camp with the Yankees instead of the Rangers this year, so everybody figures out a way to make it work, I guess. I have no problem with it. It's just a little wild to me how teams will go through this kind of trouble to bring in a celebrity to play with the guys in the Grapefruit League.
He is absolutely getting an at-bat in the spring game, right?
Oh, yeah, I would have to think so.
Well, yeah. He's got minor league at-bats before.
Yeah, he was actually a professional player, and he was not great. And then he went back to college to play quarterback, and I guess the decision's worked out for him. I mean, yeah, sort of like picking school over the podcast, Brody. You know, it could go either way, but good for him. And then with the NBA trade deadline, that was like the most exciting sports transaction news we've had in, I mean, 6 months, more than that, I guess. And
I got really pumped about some of those early off-season baseball trades, but yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, and it was like, you just know baseball is going to ruin this today by finally signing a free agent. Like, they had all winter long, and they're going to ruin today for the NBA. And, you know, even the NFL had Jimmy Garoppolo signing the richest contract in league history. So it was a very fun day for transactions, except for baseball, the sport known for transactions. So nothing to see here. We're certainly going through a normal offseason. I mean, nothing weird going on.
Let me tell you how devastated I am that that in February, you know, the time in which, you know, JD Martinez and Yu Darvish and Eric Hosmer don't have jobs and we're waiting for them to sign, we're talking about, you know, big time moves in the NBA. I love NBA transactions, actually. I think they're a lot of fun, but we should absolutely not have allowed the National Basketball Association to upstage, you know, these signings of Yu Darvish and Mike Moustakas and those kinds of guys. It's a bummer. The only hope that I have is that we're going to get into the NBA playoffs. And, you know, since Darvish and Martinez and other players won't be signed, then we'll get a little bit of revenge when, you know, these guys start signing with major league teams in June or July.
Maybe, but I will say baseball is the best sport. The NBA is the best league. Does that make sense to y'all?
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
I'm not sure that's a hot take. I think that a lot of fans of baseball kind of look at the NBA and the NBA Players Association and the owners and the way that Commissioner Silver runs that and goes, yeah, it would be pretty sweet if we could do that.
So I guess I want to ask y'all one question before we went back, and it's that spring training starts. Does JD Martinez have a home? Does Yu Darvish have a home? And does Eric Hosmer have a home?
I feel like Martinez is getting close to resolution. I feel like the Diamondbacks are going to come out of nowhere and take this one, because I believe there was a report last night with the offer they have made is similar to the one the Red Sox have made. And if he's legitimately fed up with the Red Sox, then why doesn't he just go back to Arizona and do his thing there for however long the offer is?
I'll go with this. So you mentioned Hosmer, Martinez, and Darvish. And I will say that before pitchers and catchers report, which is, you know, February 14th, Valentine's Day, I will say that only Darvish has signed out of those three.
And that's a depressing note to probably end this on.
Right. But, I mean, we're, what, 5 days away from that at this point? And, yeah, we've heard rumblings that Martinez and Darvish especially have offers out and that they're close. But if I'm JD Martinez and I don't have the offer that I really want to have, either from the Diamondbacks or from the Red Sox, I'm kind of going to take my time. And I would slow play this, because once spring training gets started, people are going to bust knees and they're going to find out that somebody doesn't look the way that they're supposed to. And, you know, maybe he can draw out something a little bit closer to what he wants.
Yeah, I remember seeing the Passan piece early in the offseason that said somebody was willing to sit out until they got the deal. And I thought it might have been Darvish, but yeah, the more I've kind of heard stuff come out of JD Martinez's camp, it's definitely JD Martinez, right?
Yes.
All right.
I mean, he's He basically came out and said he's willing to sit out as long as it takes to get his deal. So, and credit to him. That's a determined fella right there, and I respect it.
And everything I hear about Darvish is that he has a preferred destination. He's just waiting for them to meet something closer to his price. That preferred destination being Los Angeles. I think it seems pretty clear from everything I've heard he wants to go back to the Dodgers. And I think the Dodgers are trying to make this as inexpensive a proposition as they can for themselves. And I think eventually that deal will end up getting done.
Speaking of inexpensive propositions, Brian, do you want to wrap this one up?
Yes. Thank you for listening. You can find out more about the DFA podcast by following us on Twitter, at DFA Podcast. You can email us, dfapodcast@baseballprospectus.com. And you can find our work at Baseball Prospectus for myself and for Sean, and at CBS Sports MLB for RJ. So on behalf of the team, I'd like to say thanks a lot for listening, and we'll see you guys next week with some more news.